Coming up on New York Now.
The subway system is owned by New York City.
The subway system has been controlled by the state since 1965.
Can you stop interrupting?
Can you stop lying?
Yeah. As soon as you do.
Andrew Cuomo and Cynthia Nixon spar in their only debate before the September 13th primary. Also, we'll sit down with Jumaane Williams, the New York City councilman challenging Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul.
The polls, surprisingly even to some of us, look very good for us. And I think they're even undercounting the type of people who are going to be coming out that day.
New York Now is next, right here on PBS.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET. Additional funding provided by the Leo Cox Beach Philanthropic Foundation. Winner of a New York State Emmy for Best Political Program. This is New York Now.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to New York Now as we take the show on the road this week outside the Capitol. I'm Matt Ryan.
And I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union. It's debate week in New York State, but if you were hoping to hear anything about the northern part of it in the debate between Governor Andrew Cuomo and his Democratic opponent Cynthia Nixon, you were out of luck.
Yeah, we'll get to the lack of talk about upstate a little bit later. Casey, we want to show the first clip here, and then we'll get right into the highlights here. First question to Cynthia Nixon was asking her about her qualifications.
I'm somebody who has been fighting for LGBTQ equality and women's rights and abortion rights, and most especially for better funding and more equitable funding for New York schools for the last 17 years. And that's one of the main reasons that I'm running, because New York has the second most unequal education system when it comes to funding in the entire country.
On your question, the governor of New York is not a job about politics. It's not about advocacy. It's about doing. It's about management. This is real life. Governor of New York, you're running a $170 billion budget. You're in charge of fighting terrorism. You're there in cases of fires and floods and emergencies and train wrecks. You have to deal with the legislature. That's very, very difficult. And today you have to fight Donald Trump.
All right, Casey, we saw the governor making a distinction there between advocacy and action.
Yeah, governor of action is the term that our friend Jimmy Vilkind likes to use all the time. The governor was clearly making the case for himself as a doer, as an activist, as the guy who shows up in the windbreaker when there's a disaster. He was also going hard after President Trump. It's clear, I mean, numerous analyses have noted that he talks much more about President Trump than he ever does about Cynthia Nixon.
He made that pivot pretty quick.
Yeah, very quickly. And by the same token, Cynthia Nixon is primarily running against Andrew Cuomo. Neither candidate really made a compelling argument or laid out a series of policies or projects that they want to undertake in, you know, the next four-year term.
Right.
Cuomo essentially said, we're going to complete big infrastructure projects such as the work at LaGuardia and, of course, the Mario Cuomo Bridge. I'm dropping Tappan Zee off of there.
That's right.
And Cynthia Nixon really didn't make any kind of statements about what she'd like to do outside, of course, the realm of cleaning up what she sees as things that Andrew Cuomo has not addressed in the realm of, for example, ethics.
Okay. The next clip we're going to show you is something you have probably seen either on your local news, social media, some sort of website. The question was initially about the beleaguered MTA and evolved into a back and forth, a pretty memorable one between Cynthia Nixon and Andrew Cuomo.
New York City owns the New York City Transit Authority. New York City historically has always funded it twice the level of the state. The state has now funded it four times the level of the city.
The fare hike totals $325 million. Will the state pick up the shortfall?
The state cannot fund the MTA without sharing it with the city. If the city will do it 50-50, I will do it.
Governor Cuomo knows the MTA is controlled by the governor. It is a state agency, and to pretend anything else is completely disingenuous. The reason that the subway is in such bad shape, yes, we have had it preceded Andrew Cuomo,
okay,
but he stole hundreds of millions of dollars from the MTA budget for his pet projects that have nothing to do with it. He used the MTA like an ATM, and we see the result. He has had 7.5 years to avoid this very avoidable crisis in our New York City subway, and he has done next to nothing.
Governor,
why would the next 4 years be any different?
Governor, would you like to respond to that?
My opponent lives in the world of fiction. I live in the world of fact. Let's just do a few facts, okay? The subway system is owned by New York City.
The subway system has been controlled by the state since 1965.
Can you stop interrupting?
Can you stop lying?
Yeah. As soon as you do.
My opponent lives in the world of fiction. I live in the world of fact.
Yeah, hitting her up essentially as just an actress, whereas he is, as we've noted, the activist, the doer.
Right.
You know, the governor did try to tear into her a couple of times, but she did a very good job of trying to get up into his kitchen.
Yeah.
I think, however, it failed to produce a real gaffe-worthy moment. The governor, I think, even his closest friends would say, has a tendency at times, especially in interactions like this, like the debate or with the media, to condescend, to be patronizing, to, when that takes its most gendered form, mansplain.
Yes.
And here he managed not to go too far overboard, which of course was the moment that they were hoping for. That moment, stop lying, is the closest that I think Nixon got to provoking him.
That certainly got the most play. I gotta tell you, I was surprised. Usually, she's inexperienced in a setting like this, right? This one-on-one debate with the governor. And like you said, I was very surprised. She got right after him. She went over the time limit. She wasn't worried about getting cut off. To me, that showed a more experienced debater than I was certainly expecting.
Yeah, this is clearly somebody who is very comfortable in front of an audience in the public space, which is very good, you know, when you're on TV. It's very good when you're a politician. But I think that you saw that she has gifts for presentation that were abundant in this debate.
All right, our final clip.
Cynthia Nixon called the mayor's office, asked for favors for her friends.
I asked for no favors for friends, and I am not a corporate donor to anyone.
You are a corporation. When you file taxes as a corporation, you donated to anyone's political campaign. You are a corporation.
I donate through my own personal funds. I am a person.
And you're a corporation.
But I do not ever make political contributions
through my... that is categorically untrue.
And I asked for no favor. What I asked for was for helicopters to stop flying over the Free Shakespeare in the Park.
That's not a favor.
That's a favor to the people of New York.
How about for the tea house for Sarah Jessica Parker? That wasn't a favor?
I don't even know what you're referring to.
Well, you should read the newspapers.
All right.
Okay.
That was probably the second most popular clip online and on TV stations. You're a corporation. No, I'm a person.
Yeah, this is coming from a guy who took $750,000 from HarperCollins for a memoir that didn't sell that many copies. So if that's all he's got, it's a little bit kind of weak tea. The attacks that he was referring to, you know, Sarah Jessica Parker and the tea house, it was actually a tea shop that... Sarah Jessica Parker, who of course was Cynthia Nixon's partner or fellow cast member in Sex and the City for so many years, sent an email to Cynthia Nixon saying, hey, you know, it seems like the small business in my neighborhood is really having a hard time of it. And Cynthia Nixon forwarded that email on to the mayor. She did the same thing when helicopters were apparently getting in the way of people enjoying Shakespeare in the Park in Central Park. This is very far away from the kind of alleged or proven influence peddling that happened in the case of Joe Prococo, for example, within Cuomo's administration. So it seems, small to put it lightly.
You mentioned it earlier. There was little to no discussion, real discussion, about any problems in upstate New York, the people leaving, the terrible economic problems in portions of the state, including the southern tier, to be specific.
Yeah, it was amazing, and it's been mentioned a lot. This is probably the last debate that we're going to hear between these two candidates, and there was nothing about any of the things that you just mentioned. Nothing about poverty in Rochester. Nothing about the problems facing urban school districts around upstate. state. Nothing about management of the Adirondack Park. Nothing, really, I don't think to speak of about hydrofracking or really any environmental issues upstate. It is still 2 weeks away from the primary as we're sitting talking. There is plenty of time to hold an upstate debate. I don't think it's going to happen, however.
I don't think so either. I tweeted out while it was happening, this was really remarkable. You do not see Andrew Cuomo in this type of situation. In fact, the last one-on-one debate, I think, was against Carl McCall in 2002. It's been over a decade. So to see him in a situation like this, where he doesn't have control of the crowd, where it was sometimes hostile, and he's facing a political opponent who was in his face a lot, it was remarkable to see him react, because we just don't see that.
Right. We often don't see him in that type of adversarial, you know, relationship with the media. You know, he does Q&As, but how long has it been since he's had a full dress press conference where he really kind of takes questions?
In the building
questions?
Behind us, it's been a long time.
Oh my goodness. I mean, we're right in front of the Red Room where such press conferences used to take place. I mean, don't miss meals waiting for another one of those to happen.
Lastly here, as we're running out of time, the AG candidates on the Democratic side had a debate down in New York City on Spectrum Cable. I guess the biggest story to come out of that is everyone has a new title for Zephyr Teachout.
Professor Teachout. Yes, indeed. You work very hard. You go to college, you get your master's, and then you get your PhD, only to have your status as a professor used against you in a political debate. It was really something, and many people, you know, made a lot of it that it seems to be a sort of overdoing this kind of anti-elite attitude that many politicians like to deploy. That debate was amazing because while there, to this point, has been no big general poll showing anything. The last big poll was about a month ago from Siena, and it showed Letitia James, public advocate of New York City, in the lead. Zephyr Teachout was being treated a lot like a front runner in the sense that the other three people on stage were going after her hammer and tongs.
Yeah. And remember, 42% in that poll were still undecided, so who knows what's going to happen in that race. All right, let's make a pivot to our feature interview this week. Kathy Hochul replaced Bob Duffy on the ticket in 2014. She is our current lieutenant governor. This time, though, it's going to be a little difficult for her to make it to November because she's got a primary against Jumaane Williams, a New York City councilman who we spoke to earlier this week. First off, our statewide audience, because people will be seeing this from Plattsburgh to Buffalo to Montauk. A lot of viewers north of Westchester understandably probably don't know a lot about you. You were elected to the New York City Council in 2010. What else can you tell people who are interested in this race about yourself?
Well, I ran in 2009 and was elected in 2009 and started in 2010. I'm very excited for the work that we've done in the past 9 years. I would say the biggest complaint that I would get often was that I was too much of an activist, too much activism, which I always said, you don't have to choose between that and being an elected official. And 2 years ago, I was ranked as the most productive council member in a 51-member body, only after the speaker, which showed that you can be a productive, active elected official, 49 pieces of legislation, the most of any sitting elected official. We've had massive impact on the $89 billion budget, addressing issues of equity and violence. And fast forward to 2018, now every elected official is trying to burnish their activism credentials, so it's very interesting to see folks who talked to me a certain way a few years ago, now kind of using a playbook that I think they believe is popular at this time. And I just believe the reason I'm running a Democratic primary, I think Democrats didn't step up and have the courage of their convictions for far too long. And so I always say, any blue just won't do. And so I decided that this position of lieutenant governor for far too long has been just ceremonial. And we should have someone who actually has a vision for the office, and that's what I'm providing.
That was going to be my next question. Lots of people just don't run straight for the lieutenant governor role, right? That usually that person is picked by someone who's the leading contender of their party. But you're going straight to the LG role. And you think, I heard you say, I think this is with Errol Lewis on New York One, that you kind of want to have the lieutenant governor role be more of a state public advocate, kind of like Tish James, who's a New York City public advocate. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, I believe that someone was actually saying they wanted to float my name running for governor. So I thought it was pretty cool. I'm just a council member from Brooklyn. But while that was happening, I looked at this lieutenant governor position that everyone seems to just skip over. And I thought, wait a minute, we shouldn't skip over this. This is a very powerful position. If in the right hands, can really uplift all of the people of the state of New York. And we have a lieutenant governor who currently says that the job is basically to be eyes and ears of the governor. I believe the job should be the eyes and ears of the people of the state of New York. In New York City, as you mentioned, there is a public advocate's role that's not connected with the executive, not connected with the legislature, but just to lift the voices of the public. And I think Albany's missing that, sincerely, that voice of, I have to work with the governor, whether it's he or she, when they're doing the people's work, we have to work together productively. When that's not happening, when the lip service is not matching the actions, someone has to have the courage to step forward and speak for the people of New York. That's been missing. I think that role can be filled by someone who has that type of vision for the Lieutenant Governor's office.
Since a lot of viewers are probably seeing you for the first time, you can notice that you've had these twitches. That's because you were diagnosed with Tourette's many years ago, right?
Yeah, I have Tourette's syndrome and ADHD. Actually, I think most community organizers have ADHD. but I was able to have both of those and get through the public school system, from preschool to master's. It's something that I've never let prevent me from the goals that I have to achieve. It's one of those identities that I think are under attack. I'm also a first-generation American and raised by a single mom who raised two knucklehead children with great success. Those are the type of voices that we need. Identity is an important thing. It's not the only thing. So I have a vision for this office that I think is the meal, and the identities that I come with go on top of that. If you just talk about identity, you don't have a sustaining thing. And so my hope is that the vision I have and what I've been able to accomplish on top of the identities and the voices I'm able to bring to this office will go on a lot of support.
Kathy Hochul, I get, along with the other members of the Albany press corps here, we get her public schedule every day, and you can't help but notice that she's in the five boroughs just about every day. How worried do you think she is and Andrew Cuomo is about your candidacy here?
Well, I would say that there are two distinct visions of what this office is. As I mentioned, the Lieutenant Governor has been clear about what the vision she has for it, basically doing whatever the governor says, and the vision I have for it, which is making sure that the people come first irrespective of what the governor says, and making sure you try to have conversations. When something's wrong, you go into a room and try to work it out. But when that's not happening, I have a different vision of what needs to happen next. And for far too long, the current Lieutenant Governor has primarily been cutting ribbons. If you go back to most of the releases of her time for several years, cutting ribbons and ceremony. And now we have someone that's challenging what that office can be. And my hope is that they are realizing now things that they should have realized years ago. But I think people in 2018 are smarter than that, particularly in the time that we are right now in the state. And they won't fall for people who are now saying things they've never said before, trying to do things they've never done before.
Let's talk about some of the criticisms leveled against you by Hochul's campaign. They ran an ad criticizing you for owing $10,000 in state taxes, $625,000 on a loan. Their line was, our New York State budget is $168 billion per year. If he can't manage his own finances, do you really want him managing yours? Was that a low blow or a legit criticism?
I found it interesting. I've been saying I'm running against millionaire corporate elitist Democrats who don't understand what regular New Yorkers go through. And right into that came this ad, which I thought was strange to actually play into exactly what I've been saying. I believe someone's finances is, you know, fair game to ask questions about. To try to say that that should exclude you from holding office is just a strange criticism, and it seems like only certain types of elected officials get that kind of criticism. Stacey Abrams, who's running for governor in Georgia, had the same criticism, had a great op-ed about why her debt did not prevent her from being a great governor. Just for clarity, the taxes part was actually state sales taxes. Mm-hmm. So I file my taxes every year, I actually get taxed back. I didn't even know about that until that ad came up, and I had to actually dig and find out what it was. It's actually an over-assessment for a business that I had that failed. And so we're waiting for the paperwork to get back that they seem to have been able to get a lot easier. The $625,000 actually not for, it's not a business loan, the business closed. I have been very open about my business that failed and actually the foreclosure that I'm currently going through. So that loan is actually the foreclosure. I've been open about it because I think it's made me a better legislator. I think it's made me better understand what people are going through on the tenant side, on property owner side. I had a tenant owe me $30,000. So I understand that while I'm still fighting and championing tenants' rights, and why we shouldn't be nickel and diming and going to businesses to fill the gap. So that's been a very eye-opening experience for me. And it seems strange that most people have some form of debt, and we shouldn't scorn them. We should be making policies to lift them up.
All right, now we're at time's running out here. A couple more questions. It was reported earlier this week that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who shocked Joe Crowley down in Queens in June, and the primary there is headlining a rally for you in Zephyr Teachout on Friday. How important is her support?
I'm very excited. There is a headline of a rally. We would love to have AOC's endorsement. But her support is crucial. What happened in Queens is, I believe, a testament of what's going to happen in this state. The polls, surprisingly even to some of us, look very good for us. And I think they're even undercounting the type of people who are going to be coming out that day. I'm very proud of what Alexandria did. I think many people are. And that type of energy is what's feeding this true blue wave that we're going to see on September 13th.
Do you think that victory she had changed the campaign strategy for Andrew Cuomo and Kathy Hochul?
That victory, combined with the campaigns of Cynthia Nixon and myself, absolutely. You hear the governor fumbling, trying to have conversations about things that he's just not used to having a conversation about. You hear people having conversations about progressive and lefty ideals that they just have never had before. The lieutenant governor had an A rating from the NRA. The lieutenant governor said that she was proud to lead the fight against undocumented immigrants getting driver's license. And if they applied, would turn them over to the federal government.
When she was a congresswoman in a very red district in Western New York. Yes.
Absolutely. And so to go from that, and the reason the governor picked her at that time was because he needed a more conservative Democrat. Now that the pendulum has swung, we see folks trying to change who they are. That's not what we need. Leadership takes courage. It takes risk. It takes vision. We haven't seen any of that. And I've always believed that I didn't get elected to get reelected or to go to higher office. I got elected to do a job. I sincerely hope that brings me someplace else, but it might not. And so what I believe is what I believe, and it's been the same for the past 9 years I've been in the council, and even before that when I was a community organizer. I'm a community organizer by training.
Finally, Mario Cuomo famously had a lieutenant governor that was not on his ticket. He was with Carl McCall in 1982. McCall lost to a gentleman by the name of Al Del Bello. Del Bello ended up resigning in 85, essentially saying he was just bored and Mario wouldn't give him much work. If you do win and Andrew Cuomo wins in November, as many people expect, can you possibly have a working relationship with him?
Well, you said many people expect. Again, I feel like they're not even counting the amount of people we think are going to come out and vote. I'm supporting Cynthia Nixon. My hope is that as the governor, the next governor of the state of New York. If that doesn't happen, the vision of my office is for whomever the governor is. I'm coming in with a vision that I don't believe has been talked about before. And I'm coming in prepared to work with whomever's there to get things done in the state of New York. You don't be an obstructionist for its own sake. It's about productivity. I have experience working with people who I don't always agree with. The former Mayor Bloomberg had to override a veto on some policing bills that were at the time controversial. Everybody kind of now agrees with our abuses of stop, question, and frisk now. But at that same time, I got some money from my district because I'm sincere in what I'm doing. I believe it is the right thing to do, and I'm generally doing what I'm doing to empower people. And that has been a strength of mine. So whomever the governor is, you want to work with them to get things done. It so happens that Cynthia Nixon has embraced my vision of what the lieutenant governor's office is. The governor has not. And so I'm sometimes saying, if he actually believes what he's saying, I would be the type of lieutenant governor that he wanted. But I'm going to have a productive relationship with whomever we have to have a productive relationship with, from the state senate to the assembly to the governor, to get things done. That's all this is about. It just so happens I think this office can be used to hold people accountable and to have honest conversations on behalf of the people of the state of New York. Not the eyes and ears for the governor, the eyes and ears for the people who are watching this program.
All right, Jemiah Williams, candidate for lieutenant governor. Thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for having me. Much appreciated.
In our poll question, we're asking who would make a better lieutenant governor, challenger Jumaane Williams or incumbent Kathy Hochul? Let us know by heading to nynow.org. Let's reveal the results to last week's question. Would you consider voting for Sean Patrick Maloney as Attorney General? He was our guest last time we saw you, and 61% said yes. Harrison Beacon called him a great U.S. representative for all of us and knows how to get things done. Tucker, also in the Hudson Valley, said experience, experience, experience. He won't back down.
And Larry on Long Island told us it is not ethical to run for both Congress and Attorney General at the same time.
Thank you to all those who took the time to vote. We appreciate you doing so. Just head to nynow.org to do so this week. On our site, you can watch all of our past programs dating all the way back to 9 years if you want. It's a long weekend. In addition, we have links to follow us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, where our handle is at nynow_PBS.
You'll find a link to the excellent Capital Confidential blog on our site as well. It can also be found at timesunion.com.
Next week, we'll have our final interview with an Attorney General candidate. On the Democratic side, Lisa Eve will tell us why she has the most experience.
My work for Joe Biden when he was a top Democrat on the Senate Judiciary Committee focused on Immigration and Violence Against Women Act. My work in the trenches with Hillary as her very first Senate counsel and Homeland Security advisor in the trenches with Hillary for 4.5 years.
All right, as summer winds down, we leave you today with footage from Lake George, the queen of the American lakes. I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union.
And I'm Matt Ryan. Thanks so much for watching, and we'll see you next time right here on your local PBS station.